Good morning, and thanks for tuning in to 88.5 KRFY. This is listener-supported community radio for North Idaho, and you are here. We are live here in the studios for the morning show this Wednesday, January 16th. I have lots of smiling faces in the studio because we have an extra special show today. I have my co-host today is Jean Girth. Good morning, Jean.
Good morning, Susie.
It's very nice to have you. Would you want to introduce our guests today?
I would love to. We have Amy Phillips and Gabrielle Dubendorfer, both from Sandpoint, who are here to talk about an event that's going on tonight for Citizens Climate Lobby.
And Citizens Climate Lobby, the event is called the Big Carbon Fix. But before we get to that, there's so much to learn about that. It's a very exciting opportunity for folks in our community to find out more about what we can do about climate change. But before we get to that, how about the weather?
Beautiful.
I know this morning was absolutely fantastic. God, I heard you talking about it, Gabrielle, when you came in. The sky was unbelievable, and I'm so happy to see some light in the sky coming in at 6:30 in the morning. Right now, the National Weather Service is saying that the temperature is 23 degrees. Today, we can expect partly sunny skies. I always like to see a little bit of blue on that picture there. High of 36. North winds, 6 miles per hour, becoming calm in the afternoon. Tonight, snow likely after 4 a.m. That means tomorrow morning, I guess. Mostly cloudy with low around 25. North winds, 6 to 8 miles per hour. Thursday, daytime, high 34. 100% chance of snow, 1 to 3 inches possible. And Thursday night, low around 28. There you go with the weather.
And time to get the shovels out again.
That's right. I just want to remind folks of a couple things. This interview is being recorded and will be a podcast on our website shortly after the top of the hour at 9. It's a podcast at krfy.org. And stay with us after the 8 o'clock morning show. We have an extra interview with organizers of the Sandpoint Women's March that's coming up this Saturday, the 19th of January. So we have quite a big morning here.
Can I add one thing since Chris isn't here to take his, he's always talking about the length of day. So I looked it up. We have 20 minutes more during the day than we did at the solstice. And by the end of January, we'll have an hour more and we'll be gaining 3 minutes a day. So I'm looking forward to that.
Thank you for that. I always love that. We're all here cheering about more light. It's always good. But this morning we're here with Gabrielle Dubendorfer and Amy Phillips to talk about an event planned tonight, the Big Carbon Fix with Dr. Steve Gahn. But before we hear about this event, which is being hosted by the Citizens Climate Lobby, I think our listeners probably could hear a little bit about Citizens Climate Lobby. It's a grassroots environmental group that is doing important work all over our country. So one of you could just tell us a little bit about it and how it got started in North Idaho. So two things. What is Citizens Climate Lobby? What is its focus? And how is it that we have a branch of it here in North Idaho?
I'll start because I founded the Sandpoint chapter here. And it started in 2015 after the election. I was one of those people that was in shock and wanted to find some organization that was building a bridge between the opposing factions in our country. And I came across Citizens Climate Lobby as a bipartisan organization that is working on a national level to foster policies that work with climate change, because that's an issue that is very much to my heart for several reasons. One, because I have grandkids and I want them to have a healthy planet to live in and be healthy in it. And then as a naturopathic doctor, I've been more and more aware of the health impacts of climate change. So from my perspective, the goal from Citizens Climate Lobby to do a national effective policy that is bipartisan and revenue neutral and is good for the people and the economy, as well as reducing emissions, is a win-win kind of organization.
And what is the focus of the national group then?
So the focus is to pass national legislation with a focus on a carbon fee and dividend that is revenue neutral, as well as with because it has a dividend that comes
and I guess
to
that,
people.
Yeah, and so we probably should hear more about that because it's a little complex, but
I think one of the really interesting things about Citizens Climate Lobby versus other environmental organizations is its laser focus on passing effective climate policy. And the preferred policy is something, it's kind of a buzzword, but carbon fee and dividend, which we will talk about later. But again, it's a big national policy to solve a big national problem. We really appreciate and work with other groups who are working at the local level and working on other environmental issues. But Citizens Climate Lobby is really just focused on this one big issue.
We'll get to that a little bit later, as you say. But one of the questions I have when I think about and delve into carbon fee and dividend policy, it would place a predictable, steady rising price on carbon, and those fees collected from that pricing would then be returned to households. But another aspect of, does Citizens Climate Lobby also advocate policy that gives incentive to those that reduce carbon in the development of clean energy?
Well, this is where I think, if you don't mind, that carbon fee and dividend is really interesting. And it's the reason why it has gained bipartisan support is because it leaves those incentives to the marketplace. So basically, by putting in place a steadily rising fee, as you say, it gives industry, the big emitters of carbon, time and predictability to know that this fee is going to be rising. This is coming. So think now how you want to start to reduce your emissions. And naturally, obviously, reducing emissions means a move towards cleaner technology and more innovative solutions. And by the way, the energy companies, the big emitters, they're already doing this. They've seen the writing on the wall for a very long time, and they are actually big supporters of this policy. Well, to the extent that there are supporters of any policy which forces change, they support this one because, again, it gives them predictability but also choice to do what is most effective economically rather than being dictated in some way from above.
Mm. And how was this legislation developed? I know there was a lot of thought put into it. Can you tell us a little bit about the different people who came together to do it? I'm thinking, you know, it was politicians, economists.
So the board has a wide variety of board members. For example, George Shultz, who was the Secretary of State for Reagan and Bush. There's also, who is the other one?
James Baker. Bob Imhoff. The Republican senator, I'm sorry, I've forgotten his name. But I think that is what's really interesting is that Republicans who have really been aware of this issue and seen it affecting have come to the table and negotiated this, which is what makes it.
And it's not just politicians, but it's scientists and business leaders as well. So it's really a coming together of all factions to promote a policy that is market driven, like Amy says. So it's what it really addresses from the beginning is what's called negative externalities. And that's a complicated term, but it really is a term to understand. The fossil fuel industries at this point don't have any responsibility to clean up the pollution that they're causing by making billions and billions of dollars from pulling fossil fuels out of the earth. So the way this is designed is to put a fee right where the fossil fuels come out of the ground to really balance out this inequality. It's kind of an indirect subsidy for fossil fuel companies because they don't have to take responsibility for all the health costs, for all the environmental costs, and for causing climate change. So that's what this policy is really designed to do, to make that more economically I don't want to say fair, I want to say equal. Do you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, I guess I would just say that it really, while that is absolutely true, we have been getting, or the fossil fuel industry has been getting a free pass for many, many years when it comes to the effects, and they know this. Again, Exxon is being sued right now for hiding information that they knew and research about the effects of fossil fuels from their shareholders and from the public. So they've known this for a very long time. But I do think that even more so than being punitive at this point, really the focus of Citizens Climate Lobby is we're not going to try to be punitive. Let's just think about a fair solution going forward and one that makes sense. I like, although it is not exactly the same, it's very easy to imagine it more like what Alaska has. You know, Alaskans deal with having big oil companies driving through their towns, you know, driving over their permafrost, and the Alaskan people get a benefit for that. There's a fee charge to those extractors of oil, and it goes right back to the Alaskans as a, hey, sorry for the inconvenience, here's your offset. So you can kind of think about it that as at a national level.
And if I may add to that, so I agree with you, Amy, that it's not punitive. In fact, I don't look at it as punitive at all. It's makes sense economically. So the money that gets charged is then given equally to households across the board. And that, to answer your question before, that money then gives the incentive for people to buy and for industries to develop renewable energy sources so that it becomes cheaper and cheaper, and that's what people will use. So rather than Citizens Climate Lobby focusing on subsidies for renewable energy, it's a market-driven, balanced policy.
So we're not, it's not really punishing people for using carbon. It's trying through the fee, it's equalizing things a little bit more. Like, this is what it really costs down the road to use this carbon, so let's price it when it comes out of the ground. And then tell us a little bit more about the dividend part. That always perks people's interest. I mean, I might get money from this. How would that work?
So the first 10 years, the dividend comes up to about $300 per family of four. And after 20 per month, yes,
substantial.
Per month, yeah,
per month.
Let me qualify that. 2/3 of households will come out positive with about $300 per month for the first 10 years and $400 per month for the second 20 years. And within 12 years, this program is actually reducing emission by 40%. So the dividends are then helping people who have a lower carbon footprint to compensate for the higher cost of fossil fuel products. The upper 1/3 of the population won't come out ahead because they have a larger carbon footprint, but still they will have some money to compensate for the higher price of gas, for example.
So it kind of equalizes things. Amy, you were going to say something?
Well, yeah, I was just going to say, you know, this is also another place where choice comes in. And this policy puts choice not only in terms of the industry, do you want to continue emitting and paying these higher fees, or do you want to move to cleaner alternatives? It also puts that at the individual level. So if you are having $300 in your pocket each month, you get to decide, well, I understand that gas might be a little bit more expensive, but I love my big truck. And for the record, I drive a truck and I love it. You might decide to, I'm going to keep that pattern and just put that money towards that gas. Or I decide, you know what, maybe I can move to a slightly cleaner car the next time I buy one, and I can pocket that difference and spend that $300 on something else. So it's trying to put choice across the entire spectrum from the individual to the household to the industry level.
So we have this carbon fee and dividend policy. We're trying to understand it here. But where are we in the process of getting it a policy in our land? I know it's a bipartisan bill in Congress. It's called the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act. I started reading it. It's complex, but it's exciting. Where are we at with this whole movement forward into something like this really being implemented.
I think this is the very, very exciting part because it creates hope. And finally, something is happening. We've been working for this for years. So it's a bill that just got introduced at the end of last legislative session in both houses. So in the Senate and in the what's the House
of Representatives?
In the House.
With bipartisan support.
With bipartisan support. So it got introduced or sponsored by 4 Republicans and 5 Democrats, which I think is just absolutely phenomenal. So it will be reintroduced now. It's called H.R. 7173. And part of what we're doing this evening is to raise awareness about this, because legislators need to hear from us by calling them, by writing them, because what we have heard mostly from Idaho legislators is that they don't hear from enough people that this is an issue that is important. And it doesn't matter where you stand with regards to human cause. This policy is economical, it is feasible, it's effective. There's been studies modeling, and actually it has been tested in Canada, and they just did something similar nationally, so they have it already. It is good for the economy, it's good for the people, it's bipartisan, it's revenue neutral, so there's nothing, no money that the government retains, and it's market-driven, so it's a real bipartisan win-win kind of policy.
And if I can just add to that, as far as the evening goes tonight, we will certainly be talking about the policy, but really the focus is going to be on Dr. Gahn and what he has to say around answering questions about climate change and misconceptions around that. So to the extent that we're talking about this policy, it's because we're so excited, but we've actually been planning this event long before this policy came into play. But just so people know, it's not going to be an evening tonight talking about this policy for the whole time. It's really going to be an opportunity to understand where we are, climate change. There's been a lot of new research and data between the IPCC and the National Climate Assessment that have come out recently. And the focus will mostly be on that and ask Dr. Gahn answering questions from the audience as well.
We want to get into that a little bit more. I know, Dr. Dubendorfer, you have something you want to add, but I just want to remind our listeners that this is 88.5 KRFY, listener-supported community radio for North Idaho, and we're here in the studios this Wednesday, January 16th, on the morning show with organizers of an event tonight at the high school called The Big Carbon Fix. We're here with Dr. Gabrielle Dubendorfer and Amy Phillips, so we can continue.
So what I'd like to add, what I am very excited about tonight, two things. So maybe you want to talk about the students, so I'll go about the other thing. Dr. Gahn is a climate scientist who has been very instrumental with doing research about the impact of climate change, and you're going to hear more about him before. But what he afterwards. But what he is going to focus on as well is to address any lingering questions about the causes of climate change, the newest data, and doubts about the solution. So he has a very, very good presentation coming up. Amy and I have had the privilege to see it and help him with it. To his dismay, maybe. It's very informative. Not in a boring way, but in a very exciting way. And he's talking a fair amount about renewable energy as well and where it has actually been implemented already successfully. Very, very exciting news.
And later in this show, we have a recorded phone interview. I talked to Dr. Gahn last week by phone. It was quite interesting, and he's a lovely, lovely person. I had one other small question about the dividend part. I guess I'm really interested in the money part.
Everybody is.
How would that be distributed? Are they going to have to create a whole new bureaucracy around this that would eat into all of the profits there for the individual?
Well, certainly there's going to have to be some bureaucracy to manage the fees that come in and then redistribute. But that is anticipated as being very small, about 2-5% of the total fees that come in will be used to fund the administrative costs, which then shoot the dividends back out to American households. And it will be a flat dividend that that households receive. So there, we've heard a couple of comments on Facebook that this is a transfer of wealth, and I say yes, it is from big industry and that have been really making a lot of money out of this. Although I say that tongue in cheek because again, that's not the intent per se, but it is a flat amount. So people, $300 will feel like a lot of money to some households, while some other households will, you know, think it's chump change. But that's just the nature of where we are in our society, I guess.
And the big point there is that the government does not retain any of the money. It gets immediately transferred to every household.
Correct, yes. And that's where the term revenue neutral comes in. Because there's and this was a big Republican concern about not growing the size of government. And this was the mechanism that they put in place to not do that.
Well, someone has thought out something very amazing, actually, when you think about it and start hearing about it. I just want to reiterate that $300 you mentioned before, gas prices are going to go up because that is carbon being burned and used. And so that really offsets. It's not like you're going to all of a sudden be able to save your $300 unless you start walking or something like that.
But if your carbon footprint is low, you can keep that money. So that's what the study has shown, that two-thirds of the households will actually be able to use extra money because their carbon footprint is not that big.
So it's an incentive.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. If you don't have a big car like Amy, you actually make money from this dividend that you can keep and then use how you choose to do it.
And there will be more incentive for the car companies then to make higher mileage cars.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the other thing is, the more these alternative energies come into the marketplace, the lower the price is going to go. And we've already seen this. The price of solar panels, for example, and this is pointed to frequently, has absolutely plummeted in the last decade, much more so than anybody anticipated because of competition in that space. So we can anticipate similar types of outcomes as there's more and more transition to cleaner, renewable energy. And I really do believe it's not something most people are going to notice. A lot of people say, oh, this is going to change my lifestyle. What's going to happen? I bet that a lot of people have used, say, and this is not a great example, but it's just the one that comes to mind, a plastic fork that in fact wasn't plastic. And you almost didn't notice that it was made out of cornstarch. It worked like a fork. It worked like a spoon. You threw it away in the garbage. So I expect, and what the market is expecting, that a lot of these incremental changes will almost be invisible to the normal eye as they come into place.
Should we kind of segue here into talking about more the event tonight, the Big Carbon Fix? Did you have more questions, Susie, about the...
No, I wanted to go into that because there's an aspect of tonight's, the work that Dr. Gahn is doing here in Sandpoint, working with students. So if we could hear about the evening presentation, what folks who attend can expect, and also the work that he's doing with students today at the high school, just the whole picture.
Yeah, well, we're really excited about that part. I have a high schooler. I have two more who will be in the high school soon. And again, we brought Dr. Gahn here to speak about the latest in climate science, to answer questions. But then we thought, well, let's get the kids involved because really they're going to be the ones who have to deal with this. The latest National Climate Assessment predicts that within 15 to 20 years, we are going to see massive effects, much more so than we already see from climate change. And that makes my kids younger than I am today, which is kind of a crazy thought, that our kids will be dealing with the effects of climate change in a very serious way when they're in their young adulthood. So we thought that we'd get them involved, and we've had a wonderful collaboration with John Hastings, who's the science teacher over there. And he has coordinated a project for the students speaking about where each of the student or student groups does a project related to climate change. So those will be on display here. And the second part of this that we're really excited about is Idaho Forest Group, who we hardly think of as being an environmental group, but in fact has been really making some wonderful contributions to this discussion around climate change and environment. and they really should get credit for that. They are actually sponsoring student awards related to these projects. So Idaho Forest Group will be there sponsoring this event and also sponsoring the student awards. So it should be a really pretty interesting way to not only hear what Dr. Gahn says, but then to also, as people are mingling around, to review the student projects and perhaps learn something that you didn't know before.
I would like to add to that about our work with Idaho Forest Group, because I've been very, very grateful for the cooperation. I think it's a perfect example of bipartisan work together about issues that we all care for. So good forest management is very, very important, and it Idaho Forest Group is very, very responsible in that regard. And for them to engage with us and talk about how climate change affects the fires and the smoke in particular, to me, has been very, very satisfying. I've learned a lot about forest management and stewardship. And for us to come together and do both at the same time, that's what we're here for.
It's a diverse way of looking at the problem in a hopeful and make sense sort of way. It's really exciting. I'm sure you feel that too, because you're working very hard. Some of the sponsors, it probably would help to who's sponsoring this event besides Citizens Climate Lobby is the hosting.
So Idaho Forest Group, obviously, KRFY, thank you for having us here again and sponsoring us. And the Lunas has provided meals with sponsorship. And who else do we have sponsoring? iCarts.
And Keoki Press.
And Keoki Press.
Is always a reliable supporter.
Pizza? No. Okay. It looks like it's going to be a great evening. And so what time would people come to the high school then?
So that is a very good question, because we are almost sold out. The reserved seating is getting, we're expanding it a little bit. So if you would like to come, and I hope you will come, especially if you have a reservation, but there will be some extra seating as well. Come at 5:30 to make sure you have a seat. And if you have a reservation, make sure you come 10 minutes to 10 so that we don't have to give your seat away.
Yeah, 10 minutes to
6. And when you say,
to 6. Sorry, 10 minutes to 6.
10 to 6. Yeah. And when you say sold out, it is a free event. It means reserved seats.
Right, okay. Right. And if you want to check out reserved seating, you can go to the bigcarbonfix.org and be on the waiting list if it's filled up.
Yeah, and just to be clear, we do have, not all of the seats are reserved, so we do have, we did set aside for some for walk-ins, but we do encourage people to get there early to lock in one of those walk-in seats.
Plus, if you are there at 5:30, you can help judge the posters for the popular choice and participate with the students that way.
Correct.
And there'll be time then to, if you get there earlier, you can walk around and look at the posters.
Yes.
So how early?
5:30.
5:30. I'm sorry, I was reading and not listening to you.
What an event. And I just want to say thank you to Citizens Climate Lobby here in Sandpoint for putting this on. You did this last year. You brought Dr. Gahn in and he did something else. But this is a little bit more of a public event.
Well, both were public events. In 2017, in the fall, we had a whole panel here and the Wind, Water, Fire tour. They toured the whole Northwest and included us as well. And we were their favorite place out of the whole Northwest.
Well, how exciting.
Because partly because we did have a panel that was that included a county commissioner and Idaho Forest Group. So they're really, we emphasized the bipartisanship in building bridges.
Again, that's tonight at the high school. If you don't have reserved seats, get there at 10 to 6 and make sure you have a place to be and to hear Dr. Steve Gahn present the Big Carbon Fix. And it is a hopeful and clear presentation of the possibilities. I'm very interested in the legislation and how that proceeds, because it is bipartisan and that is part of the big picture that has to be.
And tell us again where people would go to find information on that and on CCL Sandpoint.
So CCLSandpoint.org is our website. And if you have questions, you can send an email to CCLSandpoint@gmail.com. And about the Energy Innovation Dividend Act, you can go to Amy.
I believe it's energyinnovationact.org. I believe it is on our website. Yeah. So if you go to cclsandpoint.org, we have a link under the Take Action. We also have a link to the Big Carbon Fix, or you can go to the bigcarbonfix.org, and that will take you directly to our site where you can reserve seats as well.
Well, again, thank you for the wonderful work you're doing to solve a problem. And as it says in the newspaper this morning, climate change is real, it's serious, it's solvable, and you're here to solve it and
Absolutely.
Help us all get excited about being partners in that solution. And we have our interview with Dr. Steve Gunn. Why don't you introduce this, Jean, that you were able to facilitate last week?
Right, our phone interview last week, and it's Dr. Steve Gunn. He has been working in climate science for, I can't remember if it was the 70s or the 80s. He talks about that in the interview, a long time. He has recently retired. He is now devoting himself to Citizens Climate Lobby and being an advocate for addressing climate change in a practical way. He received award from the Pacific Northwest National Laboratory, where he worked for many years. He also contributed to the UN reports. I'm going to get the International Climate Change Panel. He's contributed to those reports, and they received a Nobel Prize for one of those. He's considered one of the top climate scientists in the country. So with that, I guess we start our phone interview.
And I just want to remind, before we start the interview, that we'll be back at 9 o'clock with an interview with organizers of the Sandpoint Women's March. So here it is, an interview with Dr. Steve Gunn.
Can you tell us a little bit more about your science background and how it led you to working so diligently on climate change?
Yeah, I'm a hiker, and I did a lot of hiking as a kid. I hiked the Washington portion of the Pacific Crest Trail when I was 16, and I learned in that process of that I liked hiking, but I didn't like hiking in the rain. So when I got to college, I liked math and physics, and so I decided to major in atmospheric science. And that eventually got me exposed to climate change as an important issue that I could apply my skills to. And since I really like snow, I grew up in Seattle and snow was always better than rain. And I could see that snow was threatened by a warming world. And so that was a very personal motivation for me to focus on climate change as a scientific issue, and eventually as really a passion for preventing. So that's why I got involved in talking to the public about what we can do about climate change.
And did you get better at predicting when the rain was going to come so you didn't have to hike in it?
Yes, well, our weather forecasting has definitely improved over the years. But I do still get rain occasionally, and sometimes, I just spent 3 months on the Pacific Crest Trail, and, you know, eventually you're going to get rained on, so it does happen, but
right.
I do try to avoid the rain, and,
right.
and it usually works out.
So when did that start? When did your focus become climate change then as a scientist?
Oh, gosh. As an undergraduate, there was a presentation by a professor who was talking about this new climate program that the government had started. And so I thought, that's pretty interesting. And then when I got to grad school, I really did focus on understanding how the climate system worked. And then I took a job after my master's degree at a climate research institute at Oregon State University, and where their focus really was on climate change driven by rising carbon dioxide. It was really one of the first programs that focused on that. And I did some work on nuclear winter for a while, but eventually moved up to Richland, Washington, and really focused on building global climate models and actually using them to look at issues such as the impact of warming on mountain snow. That was one of my specialties.
So you did what you set out to do. And so time frame wise, are we talking 70s, 80s when you became aware of climate change as an issue?
Yeah, it was the late 70s when I became aware of climate change. And then I moved to Richland in 1990, and that's where I stopped doing nuclear winter research and really focused on global warming.
And that's where you are now, is in Richland?
I was until last June. I retired in June so that I would have more time to hike and also to build the political will for action on climate change.
Wow. Great. If we have time at the end, I want to hear at least one story from your hike because it fascinates me.
Oh, okay.
This is your second visit to Sandpoint. You were here last year for a Citizens Climate Lobby event. Any significant climate news since your last visit?
Yes. There were two reports that came out this fall. In September, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change issued a report looking at what damage can be prevented if we limit global warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius rather than 2 degrees Celsius. 2 degrees Celsius was sort of the nominal goal that people had set. But then people started thinking, well, there's still a fair bit of damage with a 2-degree warming. What do we gain by limiting warming to 1.5 degrees? And they found out that actually it's quite a lot. Yeah, there's a lot of sea level rise and impact on mountain snow that can be prevented if we limit warming to 1.5 degrees. Now, they also looked at what it would take to do that in terms of reducing emissions, and it would be very, very challenging. I mean, there's absolutely, it would just take a total focus on switching away from fossil fuels and addressing all the other sources of greenhouse gases that are driving the warming. And it really does look like a lost cause at this point. But it does show that there would be much to be gained. But we're not going to get there. But even, of course, stopping at 2 degrees is very worthwhile. And there's a lot of talk about we have to reduce emissions by so-and-so by 2030 or else, as if there's some cliff that we would fall off. And actually, if you look at further analysis, there's more and more damage the more and more warming there is. And that is very clear in a second report that came out it was actually the day after Thanksgiving. It was the Fourth National Climate Assessment. And they looked at what's going on in the U.S. in terms of climate change, what can be attributed to climate change from various disasters, what different emissions reduction strategies, what they can do to reduce future damage. And they found almost a linear relationship between warming and damage. So the more warming there is, the more economic damage there is. And, of course, the warming depends upon the accumulated emissions of carbon dioxide. And so we have very compelling reasons to reduce emissions. And on the one hand, there's not a moment to spare. We need to get going with an aggressive policy. But on the other hand, if we fail to do it this year or next year, not all is lost. It will get worse because of lack of action. But we can still prevent an awful lot of economic pain and human suffering, no matter when we start reducing emissions. It just gets worse and worse the longer we wait, though.
Right, but every effort that we can make can make a difference. There isn't
That's
any
exactly
point
right.
that we should stop trying.
We should never give up.
Yeah. People talk about climate models a lot. At least I read about them. I don't totally understand them. But I did hear at one place recently that said we don't have to rely on the modeling so much anymore to prove that climate change exists. Is that true? Do we have enough data, you know, in the last decade to say this is not conjecture anymore? This isn't just something that's happening in the future?
Certainly, yes. In fact, I think it was the third IPCC report in 1996 looked at the data. And they didn't just look at surface temperature data. They looked at the temperature in the upper atmosphere. And they found that what we see in the data is, yes, it's warmed at the surface, but it's cool in the upper atmosphere. There are a variety of potential causes of warming, like, you know, the sun could be getting brighter, something like that. But you really cannot explain the observed warming at the surface and cooling in the upper atmosphere without accounting for the increase in carbon dioxide concentration. That is really the only explanation for that signature of climate change. So we have that. But there's also evidence from ice cores. If you look at, we drill through the ice in Antarctica, go several kilometers down, and we pull up ice cores that have a record of climate going back 800,000 years. And you get, from those cores, you get temperature, and from the air bubbles trapped in the ice, you can also get the concentrations of carbon dioxide and methane. And what that record shows is that climate has changed a lot in the past through the different ice ages and the interglacial periods by 6 degrees centigrade, 9 degrees Fahrenheit, between the ice ages and the warmer interglacials. We are in a present interglacial, by the way. And so associated with those changes are changes in carbon dioxide and methane. The changes are fairly regular because the timing of it is driven by regular variations in the Earth's orbit, very periodic variations. But that affects how much sun shines on the northern hemisphere during winter, and that affects snow. But that effect is very subtle, and it really cannot explain the large variations in global climate in the record without accounting for the influence of the variations in the carbon dioxide and methane. And those go up and down with temperature because there are interactions between the greenhouse gases and the climate. And so it's a fascinating example of how important the greenhouse gases are for driving the natural variability in the climate system. And of course now our emissions have increased carbon dioxide as much as they would, as it had in the past, changed between the ice ages and the warmer interglacials. Mm. So it's a large signal that we are hitting the climate system with.
Mm. So even if people weren't on the planet, there would be these natural changes in temperature between the periods of glaciation. And we know that that's tied to the amount of carbon and other substances in the air.
And methane.
And methane. Uh-huh. And then on top of that, we can see that there's been, with human activity, that changes the amount of those substances.
That's right. Now, the climate models are very useful for projecting into the future. We have simulated ice age breakup in the past, and they simulated very well. And so that gives us confidence to use them for projections into the future with different emission scenarios. Hmm. So we can test how much difference it would make to get off a fossil fuel versus staying white on it.
Well, it sounds like there's a lot of data out there about a complicated system, but people like you have a handle on it, which I'm glad. Just to change directions here a little bit, you're going to be speaking at the high school. What's your message to the high school students going to be, and what do you hope will come of their involvement?
I'm going to talk a little bit about the science, but not very much. I'm going to talk more about solutions, what we can actually do about it to reduce the emissions of carbon dioxide primarily. that's driving the climate change, and how easy it would be without, we don't really have to change our lifestyle much. We just have to choose different forms of energy. And I also talk about why the human role in climate change is disputed by some people, how to see signs of that in the media in particular.
Mm-hmm. So the part about, is this human caused? I mean, sometimes when I've been talking to people, I've gone, well, what does it matter? You know, but we do, because we do know that we're seeing the results of increased carbon in the atmosphere now, and we need to do something about it. Can we just skip that argument about whether humans are causing it or not, or is that central to our action?
I would say that it is central, because if humans are causing it, then humans can't do anything about it. But we know with high degree of confidence that the warming in the last 50 years is driven by the accumulation of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, and that is almost entirely due to use of fossil fuels. There is some contribution from the tropical forest burning, but that's maybe 20 or 30% of the source. We're seeing the impacts now. It's not, that's really another conclusion of that National Climate Assessment, is that the impacts are showing up now, and they are hurting people, you know, mm-hmm. with the flooding in Texas, the hurricanes, and the fires, which aren't all climate-driven, but certainly is playing a role. We have it in our power to prevent it from getting worse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it is in a way, it's empowering. It's always empowering if you take responsibility for something. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. And we have, I'm sure you had it this summer too, where you live, we had bad smoke and fire here this year, and it's been 3 out of the last 4 years, I think, that it's definitely gotten our attention. So there's a very local impact that needs to be addressed. Okay. Well, I think we do have time. Can you give us a story about your adventure on the Pacific Crest Trail?
Oh my gosh.
Or just a highlight. Yeah. What was one of the things that stood out to you?
You know, it certainly was beautiful. To me, it was the people. The people there have such wonderful attitudes. They're so upbeat, and it took me a while to find someone to hike with because I was going southbound, and 90% of the people go northbound. So I didn't get much time with most people, but I did eventually end up hiking a month with someone, and that was such a wonderful experience. We just had time to get to know each other and talk about all sorts of interests and passions, and it was a real bonding experience. So I've made a good friend, and that was really, really wonderful. I also was able to get the message out about climate change. I wore a hat that says "Make Earth Cool Again," and that was a real conversation starter. And so I was able to tell people, "Look, we can do something about climate change." And we can even get Republicans to help.
We all have to. Yes.
Yes.
I want one of those hats. maybe we'll make some, sell them when you're over here.
I'll make a note to bring some hats with me.
Okay.
I'd be happy to sell some.
Okay. Well, I'm really looking forward to being able to spend some more time and listen to you. And thank you so much for your time today. It's very informative.
Real pleasure, Jane.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye.
And you were just listening to a pre-recorded interview with Dr. Steve Gunn and facilitated by my co-host today, Jean Girth. And we are back live in the studios. This is 88.5 KRFY. And we've been having a great conversation with the organizers of tonight's talk, The Big Carbon Fix. Is there anything else, Gabrielle Dubendorfer and Amy Phillips, that you'd like to say about tonight, how to get information about it, things like that?
So the event is at the Standpoint High School Auditorium, at 6 o'clock, but please come at 5:30 to have your seat and to judge the student research posters. And I would just ask that people come with curiosity, but put the differences aside and really support the students as well in their endeavor to learn about what climate change is really about and support this whole process.
Right. And, you know, just again, this is a real opportunity for us. Dr. Steve Gahn, I mean, he's the real deal. When it comes to climate scientists, his work has been quoted 11,000 times. It's really a unique opportunity and privilege for our small community to welcome him. And not only is he the real deal, you know, for the first time in a long time, we have some real solutions to this that can make life better for everybody, whether or not you believe climate change is man-made or a natural cycle. There are solutions out there that, regardless of the reason for putting them in place, can make life better for all of us and really go towards the notion of conserving and being good stewards of our planet and our air. So we welcome everybody to come. Please come with an open mind and an open heart, and we'll see you there. Hope to see a whole community turn out.
Well, thanks again for coming in this morning and telling us about it here on the morning show, about this event. And I just have to say, it just brings a lot of hope to something that's based in science, to really hear the science behind not just the science, but the solutions, the positive solutions. And this is amazing to me. So thank you so much for coming in and talking to us. That is this event tonight, the Big Carbon Fix, again at the high school at 6. Come early. And so thank you.
Thank you, Susan.
You're welcome. Thank you for having us here, because KRFY has been very generous with supporting radio airspace as well as supporting us. Thank you.
Community radio for you right there. Stay with us. After Bird Note, we will have a second morning interview with organizers of the upcoming Women's March. A couple other things next week on the morning show. Julie Calamine will be my co-host. She's the Tuesday morning show host. But we'll be having the first edition of Garden Talk for 2019. We'll be talking about soil, pollinators, and seeds. So that's, and tomorrow on the morning show, you can join Jim Healy and Jack Peterson for the Thursday edition of the morning show. Their guests will be Beth Weber. She's the director of the festival at Sandpoint Summer Youth Music Camp for students. And with that, just another reminder, we'll be back at 9 o'clock with a second interview. But right now we're going to hear a bit of music. The first song you're going to hear is Neil Young, Who's Gonna Stand Up? And right after that, you'll hear Dolly Parton, Linda Ronstadt, and Emmylou Harris, Do I Ever Cross Your Mind? We'll be back at 9. Stay with us. Hope you have a beautiful day. Thank you.